The Lord be with you. Zacchaeus was short. Yes. And the world tends to look down on short people. You know, literally, yes, obviously. But also figuratively, and this is especially true if you're a man, the taller you are, the more likely you are to get promoted, elected, and dated. Just statistically, it's a fact, yeah? And so because of this, there's a lot of people in this world who want to try to make themselves as big as possible, not just physically, but also socially, yeah? So the Bible today tells us three ways people try to do this, and the first one is through money. And that's Zacchaeus's method. People look down on him because he's small. Well, he's going to get rich. And the way he does this is by working for the Romans. You see, the Romans have conquered Israel, including the town of Jericho. And the Romans want taxes from the places that they conquered. But Romans don't want to learn the language of the locals. They don't want to learn the customs of the locals. They don't want to learn where the locals live. They just want their money. So what do? They subcontract tax collecting. They subcontract it out to a local. The idea being, well, someone there knows who everyone is, knows how much money they have, knows where to find them. Let the local get the money for the Romans. And the way the Romans say it is, look, we want this much money, so pay us up front, and then you go around and collect taxes. However much you collect, you get to keep it. Zacchaeus says, that sounds like a deal for me. And he gets rich doing it, which he thinks will make everyone look up to him, but everyone now hates him because he's working for the enemy. And because he's maybe taken more than his fair share. And so suddenly they are all looking down on him again. Well, there's a second way you can make yourself big, and that is through power. And that's what we see David do in the first reading today. Now, a lot has happened in David's life since we heard about him last Sunday. You may remember last Sunday, David was very popular. And so King Saul invited him to marry his daughter, to marry a princess. Since then, King Saul has gotten very paranoid about David's popularity. King Saul is convinced that David is his enemy and is going to become a rival king, and so King Saul kicks David out of his court, tries to kill him, but David escapes. King Saul also takes away his daughter as David's bride and gives her to someone else. And here's the thing. The way you treat people has a tendency to shape how they turn out, right? People have a tendency to become how you treat them. I say tendency because it always doesn't turn out that way. In fact, King Saul is treating David like an enemy, but David refuses to become King Saul's enemy. That said, King Saul is treating David like a rival king, and David does start to become a rival king in the sense that while David is hiding from King Saul, David sees that the king isn't doing his job. The king isn't protecting the people of Israel. And so David says, well, I could do that. Me and my band of merry men, we could protect the people of Israel. And we have sort of two archetypes in our mind for the person who sees a lack in the government and steps in to fill the void. One is Robin Hood, yeah? I'm going to rob from the rich and give to the poor, and I'm going to bring justice when the king won't do it. The other is the Godfather, who says, hey, you know, there's a whole group of people here. The government doesn't help, so I can step in and be the government for them. And it's not clear which one of these David is. Because, you see, there's a man named Nabal, a rich man, who has thousands of sheep and cows and no one to protect them. And so David steps in. He sends his men to protect the sheep and the cows and the shepherds that are watching them. And he keeps them perfectly safe. And when it comes to shear the sheep, which means Nabal is about to make a lot of money, Nabal is going to throw a feast to celebrate. And so David sends his men to say, well, you should let us have a share in the feast. Give us some of the wealth that you've accumulated because we've protected you. The thing is, Nabal sees this as more like the Godfather, yeah? It's like David saying, hey, it's a nice flock of sheep you got there. It would be a real shame if something were to happen to those sheep, you know? Maybe you could pay some protection money, some insurance, and make sure nothing bad happens to your sheep, huh? Yeah, that's the feeling Nabal is getting from David. And so Nabal chooses a third way to make himself big. And unfortunately, this is the most common way that people try to make themselves big, and it's to make someone else feel small, to feel smaller than you. Nabal says, and we didn't read it because we're trying to cut down the chapter, but Nabal says to David's men, wait, who is this David? Who is this son of Jesse? I've never heard of him. I hear there's lots of slaves running away from their master right now. Is he one of them? What am I supposed to do? Just give my food and my wealth away to every runaway slave? No, thank you. Nabal is trying to make David feel small and make himself feel big. But here's the thing. When you make something become smaller than it is, when you compress it, you know what happens to that thing? I don't know if you've ever taken a snowball and tried to squeeze it down as small as you can get. What happens to that snowball? It gets hard. Yeah. And the same thing happens to hearts. When you take a heart and you compress it, you make it small, it gets hard. When Martin Luther talks about sin, he says, you know, sin, it's not a list of do's and don'ts. Sin is a state of your heart. Martin Luther says, sin is when the heart is curved in upon itself. A heart that is curved in upon itself, it means it doesn't let love in, and it doesn't send love out. And when David's heart becomes small and compressed, it becomes hard against Nabal, maybe even hard against God. And David said, you're going to treat me like a bandit? Well, fine, I'll become a bandit. He says to his men, strap on your swords. We're not going to let a single one of Nabal's men, none of his household, and none of his employees, we're going to make sure none of them live by morning. People have a tendency to become how you treat them. But David treated Nabal's shepherds really well. He protected them. He cared for them. He treated them like they matter, and so they do. They see what's happening. They see that David is going to attack, and so they go to Abigail, to a woman, Nabal's wife, and they say to her, you know, David's men actually treated us really well. They protected us from wolves and bandits and Philistines. They deserve to be thanked. But Nabal has he's just such a mean personality that no one can talk any sense to him. Can you do something? The shepherds treat Abigail like she matters, and so she does. And so Abigail realizes what she needs to do is find some way to soften David's heart. In the same way that you can make someone's heart small by compacting it and making it smaller, you can soften someone's heart by expanding it, by making them feel bigger. And so that's what Abigail does for David. And the first thing she does is she gathers up a bunch of food that her husband had and just was unwilling to share. She takes it all up. She doesn't tell her husband. She takes it all up. And she goes and she brings it to David, because when we're given gifts, sometimes that makes us feel bigger. And then what she does is she makes herself small. She literally lies down face first on the ground before him to make herself small, and she looks up to him. And then she makes her husband small too. She says, you know, you can't really blame my husband for how he behaved, because his name, Nabal, literally means fool, and he's one. He's a fool, yeah? So don't blame him. Blame me. Yeah, I'm sorry I wasn't there to intervene on his behalf, because he's too foolish to manage his own affairs. So after giving David gifts and making herself and her husband small, Abigail does one more thing. She looks up at David and reminds him how big he is in the eyes of the Lord. She says to him, you know, if you were to go and kill my husband and all his men, that would be blood guilt on your hands. It's a sinful thing to do, to just go slaughter everyone because they insulted you. And you're not that kind of man, David. She says, I know you serve the Lord. And because you serve the Lord so well, I know the Lord is going to repay you. And the Lord will make sure you get justice in the end, so you don't even have to soil your hands. Abigail treats David like he's righteous. And what do you know? He remembers, oh yeah, I forgot, I'm righteous. She looks up to him and makes him feel big, and as his heart expands, love begins to flow through it. Once again, the love from God, and then flows out for love for Nabal. He says, he blesses Abigail. He blesses Abigail for her wisdom and her judgment, for her intervention, and says, you know what? Not only have you saved your husband's life, you have saved my heart from sin. And then David goes and he leaves in peace. And so Abigail goes back to her husband. And her husband, Nabal, is feasting like a king. He says he's very drunk. He hasn't noticed that his food is missing. He's got plenty. He's not missing it. He's feeling like he's on top of the world. So Abigail says, this is maybe not the time to talk to him. She waits till the next morning, until he's sobered up, and then she goes, hey, so let me tell you what happened last night. And she explains to him how she gave this wealth to David, how she made herself small before him, how she made him big. And when Nabal hears all that Abigail did, his heart shrivels. His heart shrivels. You see, David has treated Nabal like he was powerless. Nabal's shepherds have treated Nabal like he was hopelessly ill-tempered and no one could talk to him. And even his wife Abigail treated him like he was such a big fool that he couldn't manage his own affairs. Everyone has made him feel small, even when he thought he was on top of the world. And so it says, his heart dies and turns to stone. People become how you treat them. Nabal is treated like he is small, and he becomes so small that his heart turns to stone. And here's the thing about sin. Here's the thing about a heart curved in upon itself. It's not that sin causes you to fail the entrance exam to heaven, right? It's not like the SATs, I got the answer wrong. It's that sin is your heart closed off, curved inward. And a heart, you know what happens to a heart that doesn't let blood in and doesn't let blood out? What happens to that heart? It dies. Yeah, we call it a heart attack. And that's the same thing that happens to our spiritual heart when it's closed off, when it's curved inward. We can't let love, we can't let life in, and we can't let love, we can't let life out, and so we die on this side of the grave and on the next. That's what happens to Nabal. Abigail was able to save his life from David's sword, but she was not able to save his heart from sin. I think so often we want to help people, right? We want to save people, and sometimes we think we know what someone needs to do or where they need to go to be saved, and they won't do it. And so we think, you know, it's easier to move someone if they're smaller and we're bigger, and so we try to make them small and make ourselves big so we can push them to where they'll be safe. But here's the thing, sometimes when we do that, we think we're saving someone from a sword by doing it, but because we don't connect them to love, we end up giving them a spiritual heart attack. You can't save someone by making them small. Jesus doesn't save Zacchaeus by making him small, just the opposite. So Zacchaeus, he wants to see Jesus. He wants to see who he is, but he can't because he's too short, right? He's too small, both literally, can't see above the crowd, but also socially, right? No one in the crowd wants to make way for Zacchaeus to pass through because no one likes this guy. And yet Zacchaeus wants to see who Jesus is, and so Zacchaeus sees there's a tree, a sycamore tree, and he goes and he climbs up the tree. Now, I want you to think about the richest person you know. Ideally, the richest person you know personally, yeah? And I want you to imagine that person climbing up a tree. Is that a silly image? Yeah, it's not a super dignified thing to climb up a tree, especially when you're a man who's supposed to be respectable. Climbing up a tree, it makes you taller, literally, but it tends to make you smaller socially, unless you're in elementary school, yeah? Then it's super cool. But when Jesus comes to Jericho, this town where everyone looks down on Zacchaeus, what Jesus does to Zacchaeus is look up at him. Literally, right? Because he's up in a tree, so Jesus has to look up at Zacchaeus. But also figuratively, because Jesus is a celebrity, he could stay in any house he wants to that night, but he sees Zacchaeus up in that tree, and Jesus says to him, "Zacchaeus, hurry and come down from there, for tonight I must stay in your house." Jesus looks up at Zacchaeus and treats him like he matters, treats him like he's hospitable, treats him like he's generous. And here's the thing, people tend to become how we treat them. And Jesus, having treated Zacchaeus like he matters, Zacchaeus realizes, oh wait, I do matter. He realizes, I don't have to be climbing up in this tree to be big enough to see Jesus. I can come down and stand on the same ground as he does and see him face to face. And so Zacchaeus hurries down to stand before Jesus. Jesus treats Zacchaeus like he's hospitable, and Zacchaeus realizes, I am hospitable, and it says that he is happy to welcome Jesus into his home. And Jesus treats Zacchaeus like he's generous. And in that moment, Zacchaeus decides, I am generous. And he says to Jesus, you know what? Half my wealth I will give away to the poor. And if I've defrauded anyone of anything, I will pay them back four times as much. Jesus has looked up to Zacchaeus and he has felt his heart grow. And as it grows, it is softened. The love of God flows in and flows out to his neighbors. In that moment, Zacchaeus is alive. And so it is in that moment that Jesus says, today, salvation has come to this house. Because you see, salvation isn't so much about where you go after you die. Salvation is about who you're connected to. And if who you're connected to brings you life on this side of the grave or the next. And because salvation is about who we're connected to, Jesus doesn't want salvation to just be for one man. He wants it to be for all of Jericho. Now look, Jesus and Zacchaeus became connected because Jesus looked up at Zacchaeus as he was on a tree. And so now Jesus invites the whole town of Jericho to look up to Zacchaeus, not because he was on a sycamore tree, but because Zacchaeus is on top of a family tree, their family tree, the family tree of David from which all Jewish people are descended. Jesus says, today salvation has come to this house because he too is a son of Abraham. Look up to him like he's on the top of your family tree. Look up to him like he's your family, and he will be. Now, I don't know if you feel big or if you feel small, but I know the way this world works is to try to make itself feel big by making you feel small. And so if that's you, I want you to know that Jesus looks up to you. Jesus looks up to you not because you've climbed a sycamore tree. Jesus looks up to you not even because you're on top of his family tree, which you are. Jesus looks up to you because he has placed you on top of the biggest tree of all, the tree of life, which we call the cross. You see, in the same way that Abigail was willing to make herself small, that David's heart might become big, that both he and her husband might have life, so too our great God is willing to become small enough to fit in the grave for your sake, so that you might know that you are so big in God's eyes that you reach the heavens. And so I say to you, may you know that God is willing to do anything, to give you anything, that you might know that you are precious, that you are great, that you are loved in God's eyes. May that truth soften your heart to let love flow in and let love flow out, that you might be alive and look up to all the other people who are on top of the cross. Because each and every person is there because of Jesus. May we look up and see each other as God sees us, that we might become how God sees us. and salvation come to every house. Amen.